living in color. It's a real Kipper and Bourne show. We are live on Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus from 4 to 6, as always. Off the rails Friday?
Yeah.
Just...
Yes.
You and me.
Is this what it feels like to be an empty nester? Is this you and your wife at home right now with all the kids gone? Just, we don't have McKee today. Our boys...
For producer out. Sammy McKee, Mark Boffo, terrific guy.
Shout out, Boffs.
Listens.
Have you seen the lineup today? The lineup's so good.
They're so good on a Friday. Like,
if you put this beside Sammy's lineup, I mean, Sammy'd have to answer some questions.
Derek Brandeo and Jen Rolick.
I'm thrilled.
As always on the program. Now, if someone texts 590, 590, who gets it?
It's the old, like, tree falling in a forest. If no one ever sees it, does it? Brandeo says he'll see it.
It floats. It just floats.
It's just gone. It's in the cloud.
No.
Your phone's talking to us.
Oh, I'm getting talked to.
We got to have Kangaroo Court.
We will take your text.
We
even
will.
Though
Boff's can actually
JB and I don't have a clue how it'll work. Derek says that he'll pass on his whatever you write to us. So on this Friday, please feel free in the next 2 hours. But as JB alluded to, we have a terrific show. Gord Stellick in about 10 minutes will explain what the heck we saw last night at Scotiabank Arena.
Do you have any
answers? A number of games we watched last night.
Yeah. So what was that? What was that Leafs game, Kip?
They do that on purpose because they knew we were coming back to do a regional game, me and you.
They did, yeah.
And they just said, let's keep the boys guessing.
I mean, we saw two periods of the worst hockey the Leafs have played, I don't know, since you and I have had a show, followed up by a 5-goal period.
Leafs rally from a 5-0 deficit in the third period, come oh so close, only to lose 6-5 in overtime to the Columbus Blue Jackets. We, the three of us, yesterday talked about a team on occasion playing down to their opponents.
We did forecast
this. And like clockwork,
mm-hmm.
like a German train, right on schedule.
We should talk about, you know, the fact that we made some excuses for them. And not made excuses. We presented very fair reasons why they may have looked off. Third game in 4 nights. Coming off some travel to New York for back-to-back tough games there. Flu running through the team. Missing a couple of guys. Couple of injuries on the back end. You know, you could see why they might feel imperfect. But that was for television.
We got a ton of ideas on what we saw, but let's go to Sheldon Keefe for our first Kipper's Clipper on basically what he saw last night.
We asked them to work in the third period, not go away, give our fans something to feel good about in the third period, and wanted ourselves to be proud of what we put forth in the third period. We didn't talk about coming back in the game or anything like that. We talked about competing. We talked about stopping the bleeding defensively and working our way back.
Are you surprised that he wasn't more critical? You think it was completely warranted to just... He's not shrugging it off, but he's not really focusing on how ugly that first 40 minutes was.
Yeah. You know, you and I have also talked about the idea that you only have so many bullets and you have to know when to fire them, you know, when your team should give you more. Obviously, Columbus, a bad team, but do you think it's possible that that was a product of all the excuses I gave off the top of the show, that he was like, this is just not the time to ask for more. They don't have it tonight?
For me, it was abundantly clear. And yeah, those intercepted passes,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was led by, at the start, with Max Domi's trying to get back to McCabe, only to have it intercepted by Johnson to Patrick Laine, boom.
Yeah.
In the net. And outside of those really bad mistakes, and again, Morgan Rielly ringing the puck around the boards.
Gregor 6 zones ahead.
Nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't moving.
Yeah.
It was like they were in quicksand. So
yeah,
they had a scheduled practice today that got canceled with for good reason.
Yeah.
Like, why are you dragging them back to the rink when their tongues were hanging out for the first 40 minutes?
I haven't even checked ice times from last night, but we saw that Mitch Marner played 10 minutes of the third period last night.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a game like that, Columbus on a Thursday, you're down 5 going into the period. You think he's going to play 2 minutes? It's a lot.
I'm not sure I'd make a good coach because, and you've pointed this out,
yeah,
because you've worked with Sheldon Keefe, and there would have been a part of me last night that would have said that
I'm not,
I don't know, does this make me a bad coach or a bad person to sit there and say, for the greater good moving forward, I'm not going to play Mitch Marner 10 minutes to try to save a point or two. I'm not doing it.
You know, if you look at other sports now, like look at the NBA, they sit out their best players for whole games on purpose. So I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that if your game is out of reach, even though it wasn't, but presumably out of reach at 5-0, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, you know, we're just going to not play Mitch in the third. You know, we're going to let these guys sit this one out. So I see your point.
Okay, let's welcome in to Gord Stellick, and we'll pick up that conversation with Gord. Former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, does a terrific job for us always on The Fan. Gord, thanks for joining us. And I think you're probably as much perplexed as we are a little bit in terms of the same song and dance on opponents that are 25th or lower in the league and the points that the Leafs have given up over the last few years. It's mind-boggling.
So, first of all, you know, I think maybe if you had season tickets, this was the one game you gave away to somebody. And maybe that's why there were so many fans there in the third period, because I thought after 5-0,
yeah,
after two, I was a little surprised, you know. But Kippy and Justin, remember the playoffs in the bubble? And they came back too little, too late against Columbus, and Columbus won that game.
Yeah.
And here we are, how many years later, and we're riding that same kind of roller coaster far too often. So, you know, I do, and you know, Justin, your point about there's only so many bullets that it's 1/82nd of the season. So Sheldon Keefe, you know, really has to pick and choose when he's going to go negative after a game. But yeah, this roller coaster ride, it was fun in the third period. It generally doesn't work in the playoffs.
No, it's not a great long-term plan, but, you know, it is fascinating. And I talked to some Leafs fans who are pretty impressed with the resilience of the team. Like, and let's be honest, that's a great rollover third period for a lot of teams to just say, ah, it's not there tonight. This team has been trailing after the first period 12 times this year and have lost in regulation twice in those games. 10 times they fought their way back out of 12. So is there a piece of you that goes, it's kind of a good thing that they're, you know, hold on now, I don't want to hear from you. that they're able to battle back in these games.
Is your glass as half full as Justin's?
No, Kippy, hey, come on, half full. Half full's right. I mean, to come back, seriously, from 5-0 and tie at 5-5, yeah, arguably against the worst team in the NHL. So I give them some props. And again, to put the week in context, Joe Woll gets injured. He's your best goaltender. Martin Jones comes in, does a great job of wrapping up the game in a tough game against Ottawa. They get the shutout on Saturday. Good trips to the island and against the New York Rangers. You know, great appearance of Samsonov on Saturday. Martin Jones filling the bill. So I think if you put it in context, the one game compared to the week and the expectations, the worries after Joe Woll got injured, then, you know, you got to keep perspective there. But let's see Saturday. Kyle Dubas comes in. What's your bounce back? What's your message? Home ice after that kind of effort. Are you going to come out strong for against Pittsburgh? You know, we can't do this every single game. But as a coming back in the third period, I'm with Justin, scoring 5 goals when you're down 5-0. And, you know, it did look like Friday night industrial hockey. That Columbus team was almost like the Los Angeles Chargers last night in the NFL game on Thursday night, the way they played in the third period. But I was impressed by the ability to have that kind of offensive firepower.
I get what you're saying, that you can't just expect to keep getting points like that. But it's as if they say to themselves that we can, and I'm with you. No team should ever sleep on this offense. Yeah. But it's almost as if they believe it themselves, so they aren't too worried about maybe tightening up because they know they've got this explosive.
We'll turn it on if we need it later. Save the nitrous button.
Take a look at our record, yeah. Right? Look at the way we can score with in late minutes, and it's a great feeling, Gord, to tell yourself that we're still in any games trailing, but. Maybe the fact that you have this attitude that you're so good at it that you're not really that scared to take a chance when you need to tighten up.
Well, it could be just this same team, and we're talking how many months ago, not a year ago, the final seven playoff games, they didn't score more than two goals. So you weren't able to dig down in that well. And against the Florida Panthers, it's a reason that you lost a series that a lot of people thought you should have won. And it's the same story every year, a disappointment, this time albeit in the second round rather than the first round. So I do agree in the big picture. Just, you know, in the small picture, it was hell of a third period, hell of an overtime, entertaining game. But yes, if that is the mindset that we can play that way for 40 minutes, make it. And the funniest thing, it goes every level of hockey, even kids hockey, NHL hockey, and that line about sometimes teams aren't skating. It's baffling. But it happens all the time. And you just look and you go, we're not skating tonight. Particularly that Leaf team that has that kind of speed and whatever. Like, why does that happen? If it happens too much, if it happens in the playoffs, you're going to have another disappointment. But yeah, you've got, Kippy, I am keeping the perspective that you can't go. You got to keep in mind you couldn't get those goals when you really needed them. I can't say it is a mindset they have all the time. It is a dangerous mindset, but it certainly did show at uncertain times. They've got that ability against Columbus.
Yeah, and when you're not skating, I think we talked about turnovers, Gord. That the not skating thing was really what led to a lot of it. You know, there's a Absolutely. Lot of disconnect, and there's no one to pass to because there's no short support. So looked a little ugly, and at times a lot of pressure on their goaltender as a result. Samsonov gives up five, and they leave him in. And that was, you know, something we had talked about on the broadcast as sort of a point of contention. What are your thoughts? Do you want to listen to the audio with Gord here, or do you want to...
Yeah, let's do it. Gord has nothing better to do.
We're just going to listen to what Sheldon Keefe has to say on...
I got nowhere to go. I'm like an officer of a gentleman. I got nowhere to go. I'm Richard Gere. I got nowhere to go.
It's clip two on being tempted to pull Sammy.
Yeah, very. Maybe, you know, like in the moment, in the second period, when we talked, I thought, you know, we could just get through the second and talk about it, which we did. Curtis felt strongly that he, Sammy should stay in and fight and battle with the team. And obviously, I'm glad that that was his advice, and I'm glad that's the decision that we made, because I like the fact that Sammy was a part of that comeback, and I like the fact that he made some saves for us early in that third, too.
Gord? Okay, well, hold on. Last night we did the game, Gord, and...
I know.
Justin was real strong on keeping him in, and I was real strong on getting him the heck out. So be the tiebreaker here.
Well, I agree with you, Kippy. I was stunned to see him. And, you know, and also I wasn't really wild about that overtime goal, to tell you the truth. So, you know, I know 3-on-3, but still, I wasn't crazy about it. But I don't know. Curtis Sanford obviously knows more about the goaltender or whatever the psyche, and it turned out to be a – although I don't think goaltending mattered for the Leafs in the third period, but whatever. I think they were trying to send a message that it's on the team, not on the goaltender, about the way they played. But yeah, I was surprised. But hey, wouldn't you know it, it worked out. But boy, Columbus, thank God for Columbus, man. I don't know what, if they lost that game, man, it can't be a pleasant feeling right now anyway, period. But if they lost that game, that would have been incredibly ugly. But I was surprised. But it was one of those games where it's exciting. So I don't want to dump on it because people that third period, I'm getting texts like
dump
crazy.
On it.
you know, both about the excellent broadcast and the excellent panel,
right.
But also about the third period. I mean, people were jacked.
Kip, I do want to get your thoughts because, like, there is the idea where, you know, your parent catches you smoking a cigarette and they make you smoke the whole pack. Like, is this the, was this the Leafs?
Really?
Was this the Leafs making Sammy smoke the whole pack? Like, you know, two periods that were so ugly, they're like, you finish it there, pal.
Okay. Before
the cigarette analogy?
We go into the smoking the whole cigarettes here. But let me just ask you, and I'll tell you what stood out with me with his comment is that, and I know there's been goalie coaches now for 20, 25 years, and, you know, that's not necessarily something new. But my era, man, it was just the head coach making the decision. For Sheldon now to kind of tell us that Curtis Sanford made the call on him staying in net, is like, I don't know, man. You're the head. I don't want to hear that. And I don't want to hear we decided. You're the head coach, man. You're the general back there. That has to be you. On you, everything. You can take as much advice as you want, but I'm making the call.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that from Sheldon.
I agree in this. Like, he's trying to show he uses the resources, but he's been around this town, and we got a fan base that has a baseball team that apparently nobody made the decision to pull the pitcher. Okay. And you saw how that played out, the absurdity of the Toronto Jays and the, you know, not nobody apparently taking charge about pulling a pitcher that never should have been pulled. So yeah, I it's a little thing, but I agree with you, Kippy. I'm in charge. Okay, I may use someone as a resource, but ultimately I'm going to make the decision about the goaltending change. I just never heard of a parent making you smoke all the cigarettes if you're caught with one. I've heard of parents say, don't go out in the cold and smoke. You can smoke the cigarette at the dining room table or something like that. But to make poor Justin smoke 19 more cigarettes.
It was a tough day.
Hold on, Gord. We've got child services on line 3 for Justin Bourne.
So here's the thing, though, because I think there is, I don't want to call it a generational divide, but a difference in the coach's role now. I think that the term in baseball of manager, you're managing all these different elements, but there's a pitching coach who makes some pitching coaching decisions, right, in game about when a guy should come in and out. Having worked with Sheldon, I know that there's a PK guy, and Dean Chenault would be running that, and a PP guy, and Guy Boucher would be doing that. The sleep guy is going to tell him, should we stay overnight in this city or not? The goalie coach is going to tell him, who should I start tonight? So there's some managing and delegating and in that role, and it's interesting to see if you know, what the different perspective is and if that's the right thing or if, yeah, make the call. You got to be the guy at the end of the day. Are you responsible for the too many men or is it the players? Is it, you know?
Sets up for a lot of finger pointing, if you ask me.
Kippy.
But if you don't empower those people.
Yeah, well, the sleep guy was trying to wake up the fans after 40 minutes. So anyway, so he was busy last night. But
that was
the other part, pointing fingers, you're 100% right. Every sport, what do they do? Okay. I still think you're right. The person has to be in charge, make the decisions, but the offensive or defensive coordinator is a convenient scapegoat. The pitching or hitting coach is a convenient scapegoat and some assistant coaches along the way. So it's no longer, to your point, whether it's a generational divide, all for one, one for all, I'm going to cover my ass, okay? And I'm going to throw Kippy out as my PK coach because the PK is going wrong if it buys me a couple more months. But that's something that's changed. But at the end, you should always present that the decisions are yours, I believe.
I have seen Sheldon, like the power play's going wrong for 5 straight games, and he goes, you're not running the meeting today. It's not working. I'll do the power play meeting, you know, whatever it is. And so there's a point with the goaltender where I'm sure he'd say, okay, you're not getting it right. I'm going to make the call.
We're talking to Gord Stellick, Toronto Maple Leaf analyst for Sportsnet 590, the Fan, former general manager. I'm not done on this conversation because you're telling me that they showed Samsonov some tough love, stay in there, hang in there, yet after the game, they don't make him available to the media. Okay? So, like, you want to tell him, be a big boy here.
Fight it out with your teammates,
fight it out yourself, but we're not letting you talk to the media because we're sensitive that you're sensitive here. So that, to me, like,
they have a performance coach who they've empowered to say he doesn't need that.
Come on, make him available. Let him stand up there and man up.
You can't have your most sensitive guy be your goalie, eh, Gord?
Yeah. And people will always say, oh, you media guys, you're clamoring because you're media. But that, no. I've been on the other side as well. And part of the job is that you have to talk. As a matter of fact, apparently the NHL is now trying to promote that even more because it's kind of falling behind some other leagues in that regard. And, you know, we know the quality players that are involved, the coaches, the kind of people. But you make it a story. Like when Connor Bedard didn't face the media after the Toronto game, he becomes a story. And the same thing here. It's easy. You don't have to say anything. You give your usual sound clips, sound bites. It's part of the game. But by ducking it now, you're giving some intrigue. And we've seen the worst of social media with the Chicago situation and others. So why would you feed that? Just feed the easy beast. Give us the sound bites that, you know, you play on your show and everything, all that easy peasy. But then when you duck something, people start now thinking things through and espousing things out there. And it's unnecessary.
So as far as the progression here into Saturday, I'll go to you, JB, first, and then we'll hear from Gord. But did that decision lead to Samsonov Saturday night against Sidney Crosby?
I would do it. I would play Samsonov. I think I was saying last night he's played 12 or 13 games this season. You know, he had a pretty good third period for him to hang around. You know, the idea is that you're letting this guy play his way out of trouble. You don't benefit by playing Martin Jones. And what if Jones is good? What if he plays really well? You really complicate things for yourself. So, yeah, I'd go back to Sammy. I don't know about you, Gord.
Well, wait. You can't be afraid. What if Martin Jones is good?
Yeah.
That's good.
Well,
you know, what if my mom's
never
good
to be your playoff guy?
You know,
you're trying to solve playoff problems.
So, it's a depth. Getting Martin Jones, getting him through waivers, great move because they've added goaltending depth, and that seems to be the there's only one Vasilevsky. There's depth in Las Vegas, depth in Colorado. I thought they played him the full game because they want to start Martin Jones tomorrow. So I don't know which one it is. I don't have a problem either way, but I don't have a problem if Martin Jones is the starter tomorrow night. I have a problem if they come out the way they did the first 40 minutes against Columbus, because if you're talking about winning the Stanley Cup or being a Stanley Cup contender, that's not a habit you can do once again.
Do you want to go right to Keith on that very thing?
Okay, let's go to Sheldon.
Clip 3 on why they can't play like that from the start.
We had our game at different times. We just kind of lost our way. I thought we had, you know, like I said, we had the puck on our stick three times, maybe four times before the first goal, and we failed to make a play on it. And then that was sort of became the issue the rest of the period. Couldn't break out. Couldn't get out of our zone. It's a real hard game to play if you can't get your feet moving or can't make a play come out of your end. And like I said, and now you're giving them the puck, and they have great skill. Like that's a young team that moves the puck extremely well, lots of speed and confidence with the puck. And
yeah, there's tons to clean up here. Sorry, guys. I just can't get this Samsonov thing out of my head right now. So let me just ask you guys now. He had a bad training camp. Then it became give him a couple of weeks. Now a couple of weeks has become Christmas. How far do you go here? Like right to the trade deadline to get his game going? Is there a chance now? Is there more of a chance now that he just doesn't rebound back this season than the first 2 weeks of let's wait and see?
You know, at last check, he's 61st in the NHL in save percentage. Are you implying that maybe Martin Jones could be ahead of him on their depth chart come playoffs?
Here's the problem. If Samsonov does not find his game and you want to go with Joseph Woll, and we all assume Joseph Woll's coming back, and we all assume that, hey, he should be able to kind of pick up where he left off and be great. But what happens if he gets hurt again? What are you left with? You have to be sure of the second guy is capable. And to your point, if you're going to spend all this energy and time to keep going back to Samsonov and it doesn't come back, you're not doing Martin Jones any favors helping him get ready just in case he's needed.
Well, I'm thinking that's what I'm saying. I have no problem. Martin, they took Samsonov to arbitration, okay? that shows it's not like, here's the contract. We want you 3 years at $4 million a year. No, we're not sure about you. We really like Joe Wall, the way he finished up. We like the way you started, but not the way you finished at the end. So you're, I say dime a dozen, but basically you're in that category that we can look to replace the Samsonov in the offseason, just like a Peter Mrazek or a Matt Murray or, you know, whatever, Jack Campbell, whatever they've had before. So again, Kippy, last year, we always use the one example. It's an inexact science. Who knows? But Sergei Bobrovsky was a healthy non-starter when the playoffs started, because that's how he'd been playing. And then all of a sudden he got hot at the right time. The Leafs just need that one goaltender to do what Eddie Belfour and Cujo did all those years ago in the playoffs, and, you know, come up with a, not necessarily steal the playoffs for you, but be strong in the playoffs. And if it's Martin Jones, great. If Samsonov gets it together, that's great. I always think when you go down that road and you're not getting it, it's a slippery slope and you don't bounce back, but you never know. And best case scenario, Joe Wall's healthy and he's kicking ass.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I do think is that Samsonov has been good. He's youngish, whatever. Like, I worry about spending an asset, because now you're talking about, I think, maybe need to get someone, right? But you need so many holes patched. You know, do you want to spend your money to patch that hole when maybe it might fill itself in?
But when does that become a real huge concern? Do you think he's still got another month to straighten everything out? Are you comfortable giving him another month to find his game? Some of those goals last night were bad.
Yeah, like the one that went through his shoulder.
And the sliding, overplaying, the inability to really control your movements from post to post. That's a huge concern, guys.
He looks like Kippy at Studio 54 in his day in New York there, all that movement in the crease. That's what I think. Kippy, who are you going to get, though? Okay, you're going to give a first round pick like Edmonton did for Dwayne Roloson. You're going to get the NHL virgin of rent a goalie. Okay, like, you know, that's what Tampa Bay looked at when Vasilevsky was injured. I mean, like, the elite goaltenders don't move in season generally.
Yeah.
And that's, so you want another body? You want a David Riddick like they did a couple of years ago, just for depth reasons? You're not going to get the guy that's going to take you through the playoff run in season. It's got to be one of those three: Joe Wall, Samsonov, or Martin Jones.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we solved nothing there.
Zero, Gord. Zero. And speaking of Studio 54, I'm watching you on the Zoom call. You got a real party purple shirt on right now.
It's sort of my Tommy Bahama Magnum PI when he's retired in the seniors home kind of shirt that I'm wearing, espousing today. But then, I'm going to watch hockey and curling later on. And Kippy, great column in the Toronto Star. That was a great column about the media and just what we talk about, what the challenges organizations have nowadays, and how they have to manage it and handle it, and have the goaltender come out and talk and address things in Chicago when that's going south. And Jordan Kyrou's got to be careful what he says when he makes a remark about Craig Berube. If he said what he said last night, he would have been fine. So anyway, I thought it put a lot of context, and that is big. Those are big challenges for players and organizations nowadays, that reality.
Just trying to follow in your footsteps as a brilliant writer and an author, and, your book's out now. Looking forward to it. Great Christmas present. Revival.
Buy it. That's our pitch.
Buy
Revival.
And we got Doug McLean in the second hour on this Off the Rails Friday. So he's going to tell us how he's like a world-renowned author as well, Gord. Please come back on the show and save us.
Well, I got Kipper's book. I've got Justin's book. And, there's something very satisfying about a book nowadays. So, we always appreciate the support, because it's a labor of love. That's for sure.
Always terrific stuff when we come to you, Gord. We really appreciate your time, pal.
See you guys. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Gordo. Talk soon.
Former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Gord Stellick.
Hey, what'd you make of Ryan Reeves' injury? What happened there?
Well, I
not good.
I felt his pain.
Yeah.
Not only the physical one that he absorbed when he hit the boards, but just you know, hitting a rut and just pulling the full Bambi sometimes on ice.
That's how I tore my MCL. It was actually in Hershey. Just caught a rut and got hit at the same time with my skate in a rut, and see you later.
You know, and I'm not pointing any fingers at any maintenance people, because I've gotten in trouble on a few occasions already.
Yeah, no.
And the temperature's great in here, by the way. Yeah. But, like, I told you last night, I'm watching the puck blow up like on a few sticks.
Playing
and
gravel.
I'm like, I don't know how good the ice was last night.
Yeah, we're guessing from a distance, but it's either a whole bunch of people mishandling pucks at the same time or, yeah.
Well, I hope he's okay. It didn't look very good, but let's
hope
there's
going
some,
off the ice.
Good
Did you
news.
See that? And, you know, this is a weird one. And let me, I don't mean to, like, Zapruder the film
camera,
here, but.
The camera just cut away when he was actually going down about 6 feet off the ice.
Like,
and I think it looked to me like something gave out.
I'll say it. He went down.
He went down, but something gave. An ankle, a kneecap.
Yeah.
Something.
If you don't have a ligament that can, you know, total speculation. We're just like, he fell. I don't know. Maybe he just randomly fell. But whatever it was, he didn't need a fall. That is not
well
timed.
Once again, well wishes for Ryan Reeves, and hope we get some good news. On his injury from last night.
Yeah, tough when you're looking for momentum to have to sit out a long time.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we return, Phil Bourque will join us as we tee up the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Pittsburgh Penguins, Hockey Night in Canada, radio analyst for the Penguins and two-time Stanley Cup champion. Phil Bourque next on Real Kipper and Bourne.
Fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, to help us tee up the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Pittsburgh Penguins Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada. Never gets old talking about Sidney Crosby. On a Saturday night, let's welcome in Phil Bourque. Does a terrific job covering the Pittsburgh Penguins. Bourque, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Kipper, I'm doing well. Justin, I should say. Good to talk to you guys. And yeah, things are well. Win a couple games, all is well. I'll tell you one thing, though. The one thing about this game, guys, winning is so much more fun than losing, man. The Penguins, I tell you what, just the mood around the team. You know what I'm talking about. Even around the offices when you're home at PPG Paints Arena, the mood around Penguiniville is so drastically different when you've won a couple games.
Bourque, before we get into specifics on the team and what we'll see Saturday night here, just talk a little bit about where the fan base or the Pittsburgh Penguins in general, and maybe even we go back before the Kyle Dubas era and the bringing of Carlson. But, you know, here's a team closing in on 20 years with Sidney Crosby. They missed the playoffs last year. Gino went through this window, Malkin, of course, of will he stay, will he go? Do you want him back? Do you not want him back? Is it over? Is it not over? And just where expectations were, that we thought we were kind of seeing a little bit of an end of an era, and then the Kyle Dubas thing happens, then Carlson happens, and yet we look at the Metro and they're second last in the division. So where are fans here with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Don't forget about the sale of the team to the Fenway Group. Kind of throw that in there, too.
Sure.
I say something on the radio, and people go, Bourque, what do you mean by that? And I kind of say it tongue-in-cheek. I say, we are the Penguinis. What does that mean? That we don't do anything the easy way. I mean, going all the way to 30 years ago when I played. You know, Mario went through all his injuries, and it was never easy. It's just the way we do things here for whatever reason. The names have changed, but the way we go about our business has not. Nothing comes easy to us. And here we go again. So to answer your question, the fan base is really on the fence with this team, I think, as giddy with excitement because what was they were hoping to happen here. But it's been of a little bit of frustration, to be honest with you, because of the inconsistencies of not only the special teams, but the star players, not getting enough scoring from your depth guys. The one thing that's been the constant, though, that has been a breath of fresh air and a pleasant surprise is the consistency of the goaltending, because that's been a point of controversy, and nobody really knew how good Alex Nedeljkovic could be, and he's been rock solid. It's been a nice 1-2, if you will, with Tristan Jarry, and I think they have quietly pushed each other to be better goaltenders. So that has been a strong point for the Penguins, but the short answer is that there's a little bit of frustration from the fan base, because they expected this team, the way it's been orchestrated and designed by Kyle, that they should be better than they are right now.
And, you know, part of that is very similar to how Dubas had the Leafs kind of structured, where you have a number of big name stars who are expected to sort of drag the team into it. I did the game against Montreal the other night, and like Sidney Crosby, still Sidney Crosby. My God, Jake Gensel's brilliant. Like, the work ethic and smarts, they got all these pieces. Give me an update on Malkin, because I thought he was pretty bad in that one particular game. His season is still pretty good. Yep. 10 goals, 24 points. Where is he at in his ability to help drag a team somewhere?
It's frustrating for Gino right now. He's got 7 games without a goal, just one in his last 11. He came out of the gate absolutely firing, 5 goals in his first 7 games. But here's the thing with Gino. And I mean, I've been around since day number one for Gino. When he's playing his best, guys, he is playing north. Forget about this north-south. It's north. It's to the net. And Riley Smith was really good for him early on, because they were both – it's almost like Riley was telling Gino, hook your wagon to my wagon and let's go. Let's get to the net. Something – I don't know if it's since there's been a kind of a rotation on the right side, a different winger almost every other game, but they started going east-west. And when both of those players started going to east-west, the goals just kind of dried up for both of them. So it's frustrating. That I don't know if that's a great answer, if it answers your question. But I've noticed with Gino, when he does this, when he starts going east-west, he's trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. He cares so much. And it's frustrating if you don't watch him on a regular basis and you watch him in just that game in Montreal, you're like, he wasn't good.
Right.
He wasn't good at all. But it's him trying too hard. He cares so damn much. But sometimes his heart's in the right place, but his compass is pointed in the wrong direction.
Got to ask you about Erik Karlsson and just the overall impact. And again, talking about the game the other night, the David Savard first goal was a tape-to-tape by Karlsson, unfortunately, to the wrong guy. But like, should anybody be really surprised on how he just, I don't know if I'm saying it hard enough, the struggles of his defensive game? Is that like, should they be surprised? Should Kyle, like, you traded for that, we've seen it throughout his career, like, what were you expecting, Kyle?
Nikki, the way you were kind of stumbling and bumbling to get those words out of your mouth about Kyle, I'm the same way, man. I get, like, you try to find the words. How do you describe Erik Karlsson? Now, I play with a guy like Paul Coffey. You and I both play with a guy like Brian Leetch, who had some risk, some gamble in their game, but they also knew the situations. And that's where, for a choice of better words, I have a problem with Erik Karlsson's game, or I think he needs to make that adjustment. It's situational hockey. You know, if you were just down 2 goals and you battle back to make it 2-2, I don't think you can play like you're down 5 goals. And he plays this high-risk style no matter what the score is. And he's unapologetic about it, and that's fine, because he oozes with confidence. I don't know if there's another player in the league that just fires away off the seat of his pants and plays off of instinct the way that Erik Karlsson does. There are some pluses to that, but also I think in the long run, it might work in some games against some weaker teams or just because he's so damn talented. But you're not going to win in the long run playing that way. That's the end of the story. And so I think some tweaks and adjustments. Listen, he's incredibly talented, probably going to end up in the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
For all the Norris trophies that he won. But at the end of the day, if you can have 15 Norrises on your mantle, who gives a hoot, right? Because the ultimate goal is to win the Stanley Cup, and you got to play the right way. And I'm not saying he plays that way all the time, but when he gets into that mode of go, 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 I'm going for it, no matter what the score is, no matter what the situation is, no matter who I'm on the ice with or who I'm on the ice against, I think you got to kind of bundle that up a little bit because it can be too high risk at times.
So you got him doing that. We know Letang is a great offensive defenseman as well. In the offseason, Dubas also went out and got one of his big moves is Ryan Graves, a guy who makes four and a half till, you know, for 6 years or something like that. How has his addition to the Penguins gone so far? I think he plays top pair with Letang by and large.
Yeah, and just real quick, I don't know if you're going to ask me about Chris Letang, but he's been unbelievable. If you want me to talk about him, I'd be more than happy to. But yeah, he's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Maybe his numbers don't bear out, but this is the best. I've been watching Chris Letang for years, and at times he would drive me crazy because he would kind of play that little bit of high-risk style. This is the best year I've ever seen him play. He is an absolute beast out there. And his numbers don't bear out, and he probably won't even get a vote for the Norris, but I don't think he cares. I think when Erik Karlsson came in, I think it was almost a relief for him that he doesn't have to drive the offense anymore. He's been incredible on the PK, and this is as well-rounded a Chris Letang I've ever seen him. But as far as Ryan Graves, who's been paired with Tanger all year, he's been good, but I think he needs to be better, more consistent. And to be honest with you, at 6'5", 215, 220, I know it's not in his DNA, but he's got to be a son of a you-know-what. I think that you got to get outside your comfort zone a little bit, Gravy, and you got to be a real Richard on the ice, if you know what I mean, because we need it. We don't have enough of it on the backside. We've brought in John Ludvig, who's brought some jam back there. But at the end of the day, if you want to really win a Stanley Cup, you got to maybe get punched in the face a few times, maybe get two in, take three. You know, like when you're that big and you're going to be playing the minutes with Chris Letang, you got to be more of a disturber out there. And so that's a long-winded answer to your short question. But at the end of the day, he's been good for the most part. But you know there's another level for Ryan Graves and he needs to get there.
Really speaks volume of the character of Letang to watch a guy like Karlsson come in and not
be better.
Right? And be okay with that.
Be better.
And still bring the best out of your game. So that's great insight. Borky, but you know, when it comes to Letang and Crosby, man, they've got the recipe. They know what it takes to win. Can they not influence if Crosby can't influence Karlsson on how to play the right way, then I'm sorry, nobody can.
No, you're right.
Yeah. I guess it falls on Mike Sullivan, right? At the end of the day. I mean, he's the general. Right. And that's you got to find a way. And that's the challenge of coaching superstar players is to get them to buy in, to play the right way on a consistent basis. It shouldn't fall on Sid, just like it shouldn't ever fall on Mario back in the day. You know, sometimes your teammates can give gentle reminders, but at the end of the day, it's got to come from the head coach to hold that player accountable to. Yeah. And Mike Sullivan says, I don't want to take the stick out of their hands. I get that, but still, if they're running into a different pasture than all the other horses and it's disruptive to the main goal of playing the right way to win a Stanley Cup, then the hard conversation needs to be had. And it's better to have it now than to wait till February and March to have it, because then maybe that ship has sailed.
Okay, you brought up Mike Sullivan. We listened to Kyle Dubas last week talk about his coach and give the reinforcement, but there's a lot of general managers that probably wouldn't have even touched the topic just to not draw attention to it. Like, are people saying it's maybe time for a coaching change because this is regarded as one of the best coaches for the last 10 years?
Well, when you go through a losing spell like we went through, it doesn't matter who you are. The whispers are going to be out there. And social media all of a sudden has some flex, some muscles, right? And if it got back to Kyle, I'd rather the general manager get out there, get ahead of it, and just say, hey, whatever people are saying and whispering about, stop it. This is the guy. This is the guy that we are going to stick with, and he is going to be the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Period. End of story. And then you stop talking about it, right? Because you're like, okay, we know Fenway's behind him. Now we know the general manager is behind him also. So he is the guy. I mean, here's the other thing that I tell people all the time. Okay, let me entertain your thoughts and your frustrations. Penguins aren't winning enough. Let's get rid of Sully. You want to get rid of Sully and bring in who?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Well, now it's Berube.
No, come on. Like, no, but to bring in a better coach than Mike Sullivan, he's one hell of a coach. He's a bit of old school. But again, it's a challenge when you're coaching this many personalities, egos, whatever you want to call it, guys, they're superstars. It's not that easy, man. But that's the challenge for Mike Sullivan. And yeah, the sand is going through the hourglass with these guys. I mean, Tanger and Sid, they're 36. Geno's 37. There's no time for nicey-nicey to sit and wait and for these guys to get it together. If that hard conversation needs to be made, it needs to be made now. And forget about hurt feelings.
So, Borky, where do the Penguins fit into the Metro Division by true talent? I look at goal differential. If you look at the end of the year, goal differential is like the separator between playoffs and not. They're +9. Ahead of them are the Devils at -2, Capitals -9, Islanders -3. Like, they're not a seventh-place team in the Metro, are they?
No, they're not. And they're still within striking distance. And with all the ups and downs that they've had, they're still with 4 points of a wild card spot, 6 points from being second in the Metro. So it's all right there for them on the table. And you look, they got the Leafs on Saturday, they got Minnesota, then they got Carolina at home, and then they go into Ottawa, and they got St. Louis and the Islanders to close out 2024. So it's all on the table for them to get right into the hunt. But you're right. The one that kind of skews that number a little bit is they had that 10-2 win in San Jose. So that +8, if you take that out of the mix, you know, they've kind of been wishy-washy, if you will. They understand. They're all big boys, and if you talk to them about it, they don't sugarcoat it. They don't sweep it under the rug. They know we have not been good enough, and we got to get our act together. And the one guy, right, you brought him up earlier, the one guy that is the constant, the guy that just keeps dragging everybody into the fight, dragging everybody up the standings, is 87. You just can't believe the way this guy battles and finds way to put pucks in the net, finds way to have that yin and the yang with Jake Guentzel, the great chemistry. And really, this has been a rotation. It looks like Rickard Rakell might be back tomorrow night and be up there with Sidney Crosby. And you wonder if they can catch lightning in a ball, because Rax has not scored yet this year in the 17 games he's played. But Sidney Crosby has been the guy, the one constant, as well as I mentioned the goaltending, the one constant that's been able to keep the Penguins in this fight.
He looks like he's 25 years old. He's worth the price of admission right by himself.
But I don't have to tell you guys, and I use this saying all the time, I'm going to use it again, so I apologize if you heard it before. When preparation meets opportunity, that's when you have success. And Sid is preparing for this since he was, 12, but also in the offseason, game day routines, everything he does to keep his body peaked, to keep his mind peaked, and to keep that stoking that competitive fire that he keeps white hot all the time. We are so damn lucky to have him here, because you never want to think of what if, you know, he wasn't here, because he's the guy that keeps, every time this team dips down, 87 rises up, keeps dragging them back into the fight.
Let's get the puck drop right now. I want to watch him. I want to watch Sid. I want to watch Sid versus the Leafs. Hey, Borky, we asked you to help us tee up the game, and you did that and some more. Thanks for doing this, pal.
All right, guys. I enjoy it.
Thanks, Borky.
Really good time. It was a good time. Stanley Cup good champion. Phil Bork.
Yeah, bud.
You know, and he's been there. He's done that. Yeah. You can just listen to him and get a sense that he knows what it takes to win.
The most telling answer is the one on Carlson, where you're trying not to say this guy is a defensive liability. He's trying not to say he's a liability, because he's so good at what he does, you know, creating offense, making passes, setting people up, producing offense. But at some point, you need to be able to adjust your risk slider.
Okay, we're going to wrap up this hour. We're going to thank Gord Stellick and Phil Bork for joining us in the second hour. Back, tell us what week it is for his book's bestseller.
Is this still in the bestseller?
I don't know. He's going to tell us all about it. Doug McLean, off the rails Friday. It's a whole new level in the National Hour. Don't go away. Plenty more, including Jordan Kyrou. Wow.